Welcome to Dazer Update for April 30th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jandra Victoria.
And yeah, it is the final day of April.
Yep.
It is going out like a lion, in like a lamb. I forget what that the whole thing was.
You got it sort of backwards, yeah.
I think it's about if it's ending the month crazy, it gets nicer in May. And vice versa.
Maybe.
But yeah, it's been a busy month here the last week or so. A bunch of new stuff coming out. It's not going to slow down too much for May here, but we got stuff going on. So not too much in the way of news this week in terms of numbers, but we do have some big stories here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a big make-or-break story for the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one of the bigger niche gaming sites is shutting down.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that. Yeah, we got some unionization happening in the industry by a company that has had a lot of strife with this particular branch of the company in the past. We got some other stuff going on, some games getting dates that are nice. We got one classic game getting a re-release that is cool. And we got your monthly subscription update as well. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a lot of Star Wars this week. Finished up Jedi Fallen Order. Enjoyed that a lot. And in spite of that game getting like a big PS5 and Xbox Series X upgrade, it's still largely the same kind of game as the original. It just runs a bit better, looks a little better, but it's not any less like janky with the animations and all that. In the final boss fight, which happens in the stereotypical Star Wars way, where it's on a big platform over some, you know, mysterious ooze or gas or whatever. And as you get to certain points in the fights, your character Cal and the boss sort of gets into a certain position, but I kept having it happen on the edge of the arena, so it, like, jank around a bit before I figured out how to get the two in the right position kind of thing. That was pretty funny. And yeah, that was a fun game. I streamed that ending, and that was a fun game to play. Got me ready for Jedi Survivor to come out, which I've been playing for about 5 or 6 hours at this point. And that is a game where they said we're going to make the a game that's largely the same as what we made before, but bigger in every way. So one of the cooler aspects of Jedi Fallen Order is the customization stuff. You'd have, you know, BD-1 in a bunch of different sort of color schemes, and Cal Kestis had the same with his poncho and all that. And you could sort of customize the look of your lightsaber as well. Decent bits. But here, you can blow out everything into multiple parts to customize it the way you want, at least as up to the point that you're actually unlocking stuff. So you get the lightsaber, a bunch of different parts. The way they do it, the menu style they have for that, I think is not very good for making it easier to understand what you're picking. So that's kind of a disappointing thing, though, because it's basically showing these parts all next to each other with the lightsaber like you're going to pick in the middle. So you're moving the parts sort of left or right to put in the one that you're going to pick, that kind of thing. And it's just kind of is not a very good way to do that stuff, I think, especially because with the lightsaber, then you can on each part go further and like, here's the metal alloys that I want this to, you know, this part to be made of, and different flavors in that. That is, you know, a lot of different options. And then from there, you have options to make it look, you know, worn all the way up to pristine, like five different levels in that kind of thing. And then even when you do that for the individual pieces, then you can do it overall for the whole thing. In a way, it just makes that like stupid and redundant. I guess you could just not set the overall part if you want to have the other pieces look different. I don't know. It's weird for that stuff. And it's like, it's neat, but it wasn't necessary. It just leads to you getting a bunch of more of those chests with the different customization pieces. There's the same for BD1, which at least looks better the way they do the menu, because you're literally like smacking the part into like BD1's face kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's like a nice little physical reaction to that stuff. You know, the way they did the menus before was perfectly fine for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the Cal Kestis, his outfits, which is broken down into, I think, like five pieces. I think it's hair, his beard, his shirt, his pants, and like his jackets sort of thing, his outerwear that can all be customized. And so you're literally running around opening up chests. It's like, this has a full beard in it. And you're like, what? Cal's finding facial hair in a chest and he's deciding to put it on his face. That kind of thing. It's very silly with all that stuff. So yeah, that's been a whole weird thing. And then I've opened up a shop where I can buy more cosmetic stuff, different sorts of hair. I can get him like a thicker like mohawk or shaved head, or like some scruffy hair. It's like what Anakin has in like episode 3 kind of thing. And it's like, okay, this is all neat, but I'm playing what is essentially a Souls-like, open world Souls-like here. Yeah. The skill trees, instead of having one skill tree, now has like 9 or 10 smaller ones. One for your health, one for each of the stances, I believe. 5 stances, I believe, there is in this game. So in the original, you just had the one lightsaber or a dual lightsaber set up with a special move you could get later in the game, where you did like a special attack to break it up into 2 lightsabers, the dual lightsaber and the 2 lightsabers for a special attack. But now that is its own stance. So I have 3 right now. And I believe there are 2 more to unlock. I'm not sure what that's going to be. But that is... and those all have their own skill trees for additional moves you can get out of that. And then there's one for force moves. There might be 3 for force moves. I think one for more your force bar and 2 for other moves you have. Like one starts with the ability you have to confuse people to make them like fight for you for a little bit. In the first game, you kind of, with some droids, you could like get them down to like 20% health, and then BD1 could like hack into them and turn them to your side to fight for you for a bit, which was only useful in like the back like quarter of the game. But it was fun to get to one room in that where there's like 9 of them, and it's like, all right, I'm going to fight this one, turn it to my side, it's going to start fighting the others, and then eventually getting them low so I can just send BD1 to keep hacking these others, and they just keep fighting each other kind of thing. But here it's like a very temporary thing for like 10, 15 seconds. And then what else did they blow out into a big thing? There's perks now. You can pick up like little perks that give you like additional stat boosts. I think the first one you get is for like, oh, you can have a little more block meter or whatever. You can block for a little bit longer if you're just holding down the block button kind of thing. A lot of stuff like that where I'm like, okay, these are all like individually good additions or, you know, ways of making the game a little more full, but together it's like, all right, there's maybe a little too much here. When you go to meditate, you have, you know, previously you just had the skill tree. You have your rest bring all the enemies nearby back to life, as well as give you all your stim uses and all that, and your health refilled and all that. And here you can kind of do that. You can do training in it. So if you need help with training stuff, which is good if you take a long break, don't want to just go, you know, wander around and fight dudes and remember how to do things. You could kind of do that in the original, but it appeared, I think, after you beat the game as like a challenge mode. So I think they've reworked that to be more of a training game for that. And you can also teleport between meditation points, so you don't necessarily have to run all around the map. And the impression I'm getting is the first big open area you get to on this planet is probably going to be one you're there for a while. Whereas the original, you had like 5 planets, and none of them were all that huge to get around in. It was a lot of, you know, twists and turns and shortcuts and such to make them kind of easy to get across fairly quickly. But here you get to one absolutely gigantic map, and you're running into a lot of, you know, obstacles you can't overcome because, you know, you don't have abilities in a very Metroid-like way. That is what the original did really well as well. And the map, like, makes sure you know, like, oh, this is something you can't do right now. It'll put a big red obstacle thing on there. So they make sure you know, like, what you can and can't do and all that. And, yeah, it's a game that's sort of bigger and better than the original individually. I think together it's maybe a little overwhelming at times.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they do some smart things and not like being like, oh, Cal forgot how to be a Jedi in the point between the last game and this game. Story-wise, he's been doing stuff for Saul Guerrera, you know, as part of the Resistance that is here, because this game takes place before Episode 4. So there's a lot of stuff with that, though you're kind of on a detour for the part of the game that I'm in, where the ship is out of commission, so you can't really go anywhere. So I'm curious if we get more planets to go to. I think there's at least one planet that's been mentioned, and you start in Coruscant doing a big operation with a bunch of people. So that's the whole thing. The nice thing they do that I think is very much a product of the way that, you know, Star Wars was made, is that the droids from, you know, Episodes 1 through 3 do not show up much in the later stuff, especially because, you know, the original trilogy was made, you know, 20 years before then.
Yeah.
But they show up here a lot, and they have a lot of the same silly dialogue. Some of them will just talk shit for no reason because they're just hanging around, had nothing to do. You know, I've seen a group walking around. One's like, so, you know, we're patrolling here, but if we don't move, are we just guarding? Like, trying to figure out, like, what the terms are, that kind of stuff. And others are talking about, like, this is what I want to do one day. And then I killed them, like, seconds later, so they ain't going to do anything there. So there's a lot of good dialogue with those things. And they have expanded the accessibility stuff big time. You know, there's, like, 5 difficulties, as well as a bunch of stuff individually for, you know, subtitles, for gameplay stuff. You know, there's an arachnophobia mode so that I assume you run into some of the same type of spider enemies you had in the first game. And those gets, you know, changed up a little bit for that. So, yeah, it's they got a lot there. That's pretty cool. And, of course, people are mad about it because, you know, it's a Souls-like game. So, you know, FromSoft fans get super mad when more people than the get-gooders can play the game.
Yeah.
Play any of these kind of games. So that's always a fun aspect to it. So, yeah, that's Star Wars Jedi Survivor. The big issue right now really is performance. The PC version seems very borked. Mm-hmm. For people that have, you know, the expensive new graphics cards and CPUs, as well as people with older cards. It's, again, it's only on the new consoles, so that's not really a huge surprise that people with the older cards would have issues with this game. But for the consoles, they have, you know, performance modes and fidelity modes. I'm on the performance mode, so it mostly hits 60, mm-hmm. but it does have some areas where it chunks up a little bit. That can be a little annoying. I assume they're going to be doing a lot of work. They put out an apology on the for the PC version for that. So it seems like they basically did the same thing as the original game, where put it out earlier than it maybe should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Just to hit a date. I don't even know what this date would have been special to. They could have pushed it to, like, June maybe would have been a bad time. May or June. I'm guessing they might have wanted to get it out before Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm.
Yeah, like a July launch probably wouldn't have been too bad for them, but they're going to sell well enough to make up for any, you know, PR issues they're going to have for a while.
Yeah.
So that's going to be okay on their front. I think people on the consoles are probably going to be okay on the performance stuff, but due to the infinite nature of PCs, you know, architecture and all that, that's going to be, you know, a bunch of work that they're going to have to do there mm-hmm. to make it better. So we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, that's Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Very fun game. A little rough around the edges on different things. It still has the same kind of double jump system, and I can still get my Cal Kestis character model to flip out if I'm, you know, trying to do stuff up against walls and all that.
Mm.
So there's still a lot of plenty of jank in there.
Oh, yeah.
And I've taken the photo mode, managed to get pictures from inside Cal's head. So it seemed like the emptiness in there, but also the scariness, the seeing like his teeth and tongue and inside of his eyeballs and all that. So, yeah, there you go for that. But yeah, that game's cool. Yeah. Let's see, for other stuff I've been playing, MLB The Show 23. They put up new like events all the time for people to unlock new cards in the Diamond Dynasty mode. Put the new one up as a Mexico City series, which features a lot of players from Mexico. It was moments and all that kind of stuff to unlock more of them. Yeah. So that's cool. Been working on some of that stuff. And yeah, still enjoying that a lot. Still enjoying the Diamond Dynasty more than I have in a while. Yeah. Past few years, I think I'm already, I forget how much time I put into that game. I want to say I might be at like 50 hours already on that. A lot of time just letting it sit while I'm doing other stuff, but still seems like a very good MLB The Show game for the past couple of years, so.
Yeah.
That's great. And yeah, much like I was getting ready to beat Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order before Survivor came out, I'm playing Breath of the Wild before Tears of the Kingdom comes out, trying to finish it. And I've been finishing up the beasts, the four beasts. I had one more to go. Went and did that. It's the big lizard that hangs out in Death Mountain that is hard to get to just on its own compared to all the others that are, you know, hanging around pretty easily to get to. That one, you know, it hangs up on this big tall mountain with a bunch of lava flowing all around it. Lots of climbing, all that. So that makes it a little bit tough to get to. And I definitely remember dealing with it in the past and probably falling into the lava and whatnot and just going through that little dungeon there. Was also a bit annoying as I'd easily just fall through holes almost to my doom, and luckily just land, you know, use my glider to land on a part of it that could be landed on and have it, you know, twist and turn around and get me back on some solid footing, that kind of stuff. But the boss fights with, I forget what, Fire Ganon, his little weird boss fight there was pretty easy for the most part. There was just one aspect of it I didn't understand what the mechanic was. It wanted me to use a bomb to, as it was sucking stuff in, to do that. And I just did not think of that as a mechanic in the game at that point. So I had to do a lot of relearning about how things work. And yeah, I haven't paid attention to any of the previews that have been going on for the past week or so. I've seen a little bit of chatter that like the controls are a little more complex now. On top of controls that are already fairly complex for what Breath of the Wild has on top of the typical Zelda formula kind of thing. So that's an interesting decision to go for with everything they're doing. So I'm still looking forward to that game. Still wanted to play this and finish it up. I'll probably use a lot of guides to look at what the various quests I have and see like how to do them instead of trying to figure out everything on my own. I've already put over 100 hours into it doing that, doing it without guides. So I'm at the point where I was like, I just want to, you know, build up my heart meter and stamina meter and all that the best way I can. So that's been Breath of the Wild. And yeah, I've been playing more Rocket League. They have an event going on. I think it's called Driving Days, something like that. That is pretty fun, has some extra stuff to unlock. I think, yeah, you can unlock a car in there. It has some challenges related to using that, but I have not unlocked it yet, so I still have to do some more things. But that's been pretty much it for me this week. So, Brandon, how about you? What have you been doing?
I am still playing Paradise Killer, which is, I've talked about it before, it's heavily inspired by Danganronpa, but its concept is much more, you know, high concept than Danganronpa wishes it could be. But it's pretty good. If the only issue I have is that it doesn't really have the kind of, well, it's not really a like a plus or minus type thing. It's just, it's a lot more open-ended than Danganronpa, because Danganronpa is very much very linear. Whereas in Paradise Killer, you can pretty much end the game at any time that you really want. Because unlike in Danganronpa, in Paradise Killer, you're specifically trying to find people who are responsible for a murder. And you can basically, like, as the game goes on, you kind of find out that it's kind of a Murder on the Orient Express situation where basically everybody has motive and means to have done it in some way. So you can practically like accuse anyone of it and have them executed at any time. But I'm trying to take the time to sort of get everything out and get to the actual truth so that the actual people responsible will be, you know, get their comeuppance. Not that, you know, none of the, you know, very few of the people you meet in this game are people who frankly are awful and deserve to die. Because let's be honest, pretty much everybody in this game is part of are leaders of a death cult who are basically trying to resurrect like destructive alien gods in order by, you know, creating their own personal pocket dimensions by kidnapping a bunch of innocent people and then sacrificing them in mass whenever that utopian sort of project inevitably fails. So yeah, they're all terrible people and they all deserve the absolute worst. But the other thing I'm playing and really enjoying, and honestly, it's just, I'm kicking myself for the fact that I had not really been playing this game seriously up until now. Outer Wilds, which is a game made by Mobius Digital, which, of course, the sort of fun trivia of that company is that it was founded by Masioka, the guy who played Hero on Heroes, amongst a bunch of other stuff. Which, when you look at his, you know, his background, you find out that the dude's actually done like a lot of stuff. He originally was like a digital effects artist at Industrial Light and Magic before he decided to become an actor. And so he knows a lot about tech and stuff. So, you know, eventually what happened is he finally just decided to go and found his own company because all of his project ideas kept getting shelved onto development hell. So he's like, screw it, I'll just go and do it myself. And so he decided to finally found his own company. And the first game they put out was Outer Wilds. And Outer Wilds is a very amazing science fiction game that I have, honestly, I'm kicking myself that I haven't tried to really seriously play it until now. I've tried at first a couple of times in fits and starts, and either I just, there was other things that took my interest, or I had to deal with the controls at first, and just, you know, just, I lost interest. But, you know, once you, like, really get a handle on the controls for this game, it really opens up. It's just an amazing and a lot of essentially, you are a member of this alien species who have decided to start their space program, and there's a bunch of astronauts that are already out there, sort of hanging out on the other worlds in this particular galaxy, and you're one of the new ones, and so you get in your ship, and you lift off, and one of the things you find out is that, and basically the mystery, the sort of central mystery of the game is, there's this sort of other alien race called the Nomai that, you know, no longer exists. But their ruins and, like, their old tech and their records and stuff are, like, still everywhere to be found. And you can just, you know, basically go around and you'll find, like, their ruins, pieces of their old tech, and you'll also find, like, records that they left behind. And their language is very funny because it's kind of like swirls out and around, and every time a new person decides to add onto the conversation, they like branch off from one spiral into another. You basically have like a translator machine that you keep with you at all times that helps you read all this stuff. And it's there at the same time, and this ended up having to be night, the sun is slowly starting to go nova as you're doing this. So, you know, you're kind of sort of on a time limit. But the thing is, after you die the first time, which you inevitably will, the whole time loop sort of reverses itself and starts again. Which seems, and I think that it had something to do with, like, in the beginning of the game when you end up going into their, like, the little museum they have dedicated to the Nomai, and there's this sculpture there, this, like, statue that turns around and, like, glows with eyes and gives you some sort of power or whatever. And so basically every time you die, you basically restart at the first day again. Which is actually kind of nice when you find that out, because it kind of takes a lot of the stress out of the situation. Because you keep like all the records and stuff and the knowledge that you've kept up to that point. But you might have to go back and like redo some of the tech or whatever. But yeah, most of the time it's a fairly chill game, but it also gets really eerie too at times. There's a, especially like as the story starts to go on, you start to realize like where the Nomai actually came from, why they're in that particular galaxy, and there's hints here and there of what may or may not have happened to them, and it gets increasingly unnerving as you go along, but it's legit a great game. Highly recommend it. And if you're like, you know, if you're got PS Plus, and I think it's also on Game Pass as well. You can get it. It's for free. It's really good. Outer Wilds. Definitely recommend it. But yeah, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, on my side, I'm still playing what I was playing last week. Last week I had finished Coffee Talk. Now I'm playing Coffee Talk Episode 2, This Is a Butterfly. Talked about it last week. The main differences are the fact that you have more ingredients to mix more coffee, and even though that's literally all you do, aside from just hearing all these people's stories that you meet at the cafe, it's really interesting because you don't really know the recipes for anything that you're making. You have to use context clues in regards to making all of your patrons the right thing. So this will affect your endings and whatnot. So everybody has a good ending and a bad ending, depending on how you make their coffee. It's also one of those games where after you finish it the first time, you do have to play a few chapters again just to see like other open-ended things that happen, because the barista you play has a secret related to some of the characters you come across in the game. And it's just interesting seeing how all these play out. So yeah, aside from the fact that you're just choosing ingredients to go ahead and brew coffee, the game is really just an interesting visual novel. All of the graphics are pretty much reminiscent of what you'd see from like Phoenix Wright. So it's just awesome pixel art. And yeah, it's just been a really solid experience. With this second game, a lot of the characters from the previous one come back, and like you're seeing the fruit of your labor from the previous game. So assuming that you got all the good endings, you know, you're seeing what's happening in their lives now and what's being updated. Like, for example, in the previous game, you saw like an orc and like some sort of demon get together, and now they're talking about their wedding, and you're hearing about all of the drama that's happening with their wedding, because, you know, it's like the husband or the male in the relationship is trying to make sure that their future wife has the best wedding they can have. But, you know, all that stuff kind of puts unneeded pressure on her, and he's not really seeing things that way. Like, everything has been really, really eye-opening, and I'm really, really impressed by the writing with this game. And I'm about halfway through. I'll probably get maybe 3/4 of the way through, if not finish it today, just because there is one more day in this game than there was in the last. The last one had about 14 days to complete. This one has 15. And each of these days are actually longer than they were previously. So sometimes I try to start the game and say, all right, I'm going to do one day today. But it ends up being longer than I thought. And again, like, some of these chapters only have you make one or two coffees while, you know, the rest is just dialogue. And that's pretty much the loop. And then the other thing is you can also give people items. Sometimes it's because maybe the policeman left his lighter there. So the next time the policeman comes in, you want to make him his coffee and give him his lighter. Or other situations where there's one character who seems to be interested in another character, so he leaves his calling card so that the character can reach out to him the next time you run across him. All that kind of stuff. Coffee Talk is a very cozy game. It's not something that, you know, you want to play if you don't want to read. But again, I am just really impressed by the writing and each of these characters, because I actually care about everybody. And they're, I mean, with as many narrative games as I've played, like, I can't say that, you know, I really admire the characters as much as I have here. These are short, too. These are, like, maybe 4 hours each, less than that. So, yeah, really enjoying it, and I can't wait to finish it. So that's pretty much been it for me. I also got my my special edition of Zelda Switch today, so I'm looking forward to cracking that open, but I'm not looking forward to transferring all my data, because that's not fun. Anyway, that's all.
Yeah, I've heard there's some OLED issues on those new Switches.
Oh, no. Is it? I remember seeing like a screenshot about like having the screens be green or some sort of tint.
Yeah, there's like a green tint on some of them.
Okay, so I gotta be careful.
Yeah, good to check that early so you have time to return it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get to news. We got a new month here starting up. So we got some new games for people to check out for their monthly subscriptions for PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold. We'll start with PlayStation Plus. We got three new games here and a bit of an interesting mix of stuff here. We have for PS5 and PS4, Grid Legends as the latest Grid game. So a bit more of a sim-lite racing game from Codemasters and EA. I guess it has a bit of a story to it as well. So that's neat. I haven't played this, but I've heard good things about it. So that's one you can check out there. Also for PS5 and PS4, there's Chivalry 2, which is a multiplayer first-person melee game set in sort of a medieval European setting, essentially. A lot of characters that, you know, wield swords and shields, and you probably get some with bows and that kind of stuff. A very specific kind of multiplayer game. Four classes, 12 subclasses, all that kind of stuff. So that's very much an interesting multiplayer game to put on there. Mm-hmm. And the last one for PS4 is Descenders. I played a bit of this on Game Pass. It is a procedurally generated extreme downhill biking game where you, when you start the campaign, essentially gives you like a choice of a few. It's almost like a Slay the Spire kind of map of challenges where you pick one and sort of move, try to complete the challenge it gives you. And it might be just simple, like get to the end without, you know, crashing, or, you know, due to backflips here and that kind of stuff. And it'll generate a stage for you. They have like different types of stages it'll generate. Some of them more focused on, you know, big jumps. Some of them more focused on lots of turns to keep you, you know, engaged on that front, that kind of stuff. And then sometimes it'll throw in like potential really, you know, fucky stages trying to really give you opportunities to fall apart and die. Because I think you get a certain amount of lives. If you beat stages, you get like an additional life, lets you keep going. Mm-hmm. But I believe at the end of every run, you get like a cosmetic that unlocks for it. So you can customize the look of your, you know, rider's outfit kind of thing. So that's a neat little game.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one worth checking out if you're into that kind of stuff. So there you go. Pretty solid month. Nothing that's really amazing here, but some decent stuff for games with gold, though. This one's actually a pretty decent month as well. They got two games again for May 1st to May 31st. There's Star Wars Episode One Racer, so you can get the remaster of the classic N64 game that is, at least back then, was a big deal game, probably the best of the Episode One games that came out around then. As a racing game that you would never expect to be all that good for Star Wars. A few years later, maybe it was around this time that they did like a Twisted Metal style, you know, car combat game that just was dreadful, which is actually part of PlayStation Plus Premium, where you can buy it outright if you want. There's also Bombad Race in their attempt at like a kart racing game that also wasn't very good. But Racer is supposed to be pretty good, and I think I haven't heard anything like terrible about this newer edition. I just haven't gotten around to buying it yet. But user reviews look pretty good. So let's see. The other game available May 16th to June 15th is Hoa. This is a game that I played and beat on PS5. It is a platformer, like adventure game, essentially, like a puzzle platformer, but nothing too complex. It's not trying to be like a super hard game, but it's a pretty easy platinum, so it should be a pretty easy 1,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
You're just basically getting all the collectibles that are not too hard to find, and you know, get through the world pretty quickly. Maybe just look at like a little trophy or achievement guide for it. It's nothing, shouldn't be too hard for any of that stuff, but has a very nice look to it. A little bit of Studio Ghibli kind of look to it.
Mm-hmm.
For that, it's a very beautiful game. Definitely worth checking out. So there you go. Probably one of the best months that Games with Gold has had in a long time.
In a long, long time.
Yeah. So there you go. Two games to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Before the regular news here, we got some dates here. Star Trek Resurgence is finally coming out May 23rd. Mm-hmm. This is the narrative adventure game that was being made by some ex-Telltale people that formed Dramatic Labs. This was announced at the 2021 Game Awards on the Jeff Keighley show. So it's been about a year and a half since then, and they're finally getting this out. It's been delayed a couple of times, but it's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and PC on May 23rd. Hopefully it turns out pretty well, but it looks pretty neat. I do like the screenshots I got are just the same screenshot three times with Xbox, PlayStation, and PC buttons.
Oh.
So that's pretty good. I guess you just use the number keys for the dialogue choices for that stuff. So that's the whole thing. But this is set after the Next Generation's timeline. Mm-hmm. In case you're wondering where this is set at, but so that's neat. New Star Trek thing coming out pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
For people that want that. And yeah, Final Fantasy 16 is coming out June 22nd. We already knew that. But we did find out that there is a PlayStation 5 bundle that'll include a PlayStation 5 disc version, controller, and a code for the game for, I think, $550. Mm-hmm. I don't think they, that's going to be sold on the PlayStation Direct. But that starts May 4th. No special cosmetic, you know, like shell or anything for the controller or the console in that bundle. So people have been a little bit disappointed by that because I guess in Japan, they do have a special DualSense controller that's being sold with some artwork on it. I don't even know what this artwork is. It's some sort of, I don't know, it's a neat look to it. And then there is a special PS5 cover that's black with the sort of logo on the sides, not with the name on it, but that logo art, the classic Final Fantasy style logo stuff on it. That looks pretty neat for that. So yeah, we don't know if that's coming over to the West, but it may not. That's typically how it's been for the PS4 stuff in the past. And I assume it's probably the same here. So you have to probably look at some of the import shops and hope they're not going to charge too much of a premium on that stuff. But there you go. If you haven't gotten a PS5 yet, this may be a way to get one if you want it for Final Fantasy 16. So yeah, there you go for that. And then the other big date we have is Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon finally got a release date. August 25th for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. Yeah, bit of a surprise announcement. They put out a trailer for it as well. And they also announced a special edition, collector's edition, I guess, that comes with a big figurine. I don't know how big it is, but it definitely looks pretty big.
Oh, yeah.
Art book, steel book, stickers, digital soundtrack, and some pin badges, as well as they have some, you know, deluxe edition stuff as well, if you want to pre-order it now, I guess. But yeah, I'm curious to see some more, like, cohesive gameplay stuff out of that. See what exactly that game is doing.
Yeah, I haven't seen the trailer yet. This definitely does have it's been a while since we've had a real game. And even then, like, it was a different From Software, right? It's not the From Software we see today where they're winning, like, Game of the Year. So I hope to see the game or the genre, because this pretty much, like, set up a genre on its own, really evolve here. So, so far, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this was basically, yeah, the art series in general was pretty well underway before Miyazaki joined the company and, you know, was given control over what will become Demon Souls. So yeah. But yeah, it's kinda interesting to see they're doing this series again.
Yeah. It's a weird franchise because it's jumped around to different publishers over the years.
Oh yeah.
And it's kind of very unique in that way that I guess From Software technically owns it or a controlling interest in it in a way that not many developers would for a franchise. It's on its sixth main iteration. It's had other spinoffs and such. But I think like the first one was published by PlayStation, but then moved over to some other publishers. Bandai Namco, I think, has published the last couple of them. So not really a huge surprise that they would just keep working with them on this. But yeah, it's going to be interesting because this is kind of a weird way that this game is being handled marketing-wise because we haven't really seen much of the gameplay or I haven't seen any like big deal made of like gameplay, you know, walkthroughs and whatnot of the game so far. And we already have a date and that kind of stuff. And, you know, we got it announced, you know, back in December. So not even more than 5 months ago did we really find out that it existed. So that's the whole thing. So I'm curious to see, like, you know, what we learn more about this game as it's, you know, goes into the last 4 months of up to launch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's that. For the next thing here, there's this interesting looking game coming out to everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC, called Paleo Pines. This is a, you know, life sim game, but as you can tell, maybe from the title, that you're going to something of a dinosaur ranch. We get to ride around cute dinosaurs, that kind of stuff. Yeah, no real Jurassic Park fears to it. Everything seems pretty cutesy and friendly. You're building up a ranch, fixing up a ranch, and growing crops to create a cozy sanctuary for yourself and your, you know, friendly dinosaurs. I guess you can get the dinosaurs to help you out with stuff. So that's cool. That'll be out this fall. There's a bunch of stories of games of this ilk getting dates and whatnot. And this is the one that stuck out to me over everything else. So there you go. That's neat. And then here we got a big deal game getting announced. Might and Magic Clash of Heroes Definitive Edition was announced for PS4, Switch, and PC. The game was originally created by Capybara Games. Some coming off of you know, Critter Crunch and some games like that. This was on the DS originally. Part of the Might and Magic series that probably most of the people that played this had no clue what the hell that is. Because that is a very hardcore PC franchise of, like, strategy games. There's, like, first-person combat games. Maybe one other type of genre that those games could be in in the series. But this one came out on the DS. It was like a, you know, match three kind of, you know, puzzle game, but with a lot of, you know, strategy and RPG elements and such that worked out really well in the dual screen setup. And then they made, you know, HD versions on the Xbox 360 and PS3 that also worked really well. Looked really nice. Had a nice little story to it and lasted a good bit of time for the money that it cost. And yeah, but that's been the last versions we've seen. But now they are, .mu is the one publishing and developing this new version with, for the Switch, PS4, and PC. That'll have, you know, include all the DLC, multiplayer, the campaign, maybe has some slight changes to it, some quality of life stuff and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it'll be the same game again, which is great to see. I'd love to play through that game again. That's one of the best puzzle games to come out in the last, like, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I've never actually given this series a chance. I don't know if I still will, but, you know, looking at the screenshots and these videos, it looks really, really nice. I'm loving the art style, and Dodimo doesn't miss, so that's definitely worth noting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good, you know, puzzle combat system that I would say even makes it better than, you know, Puzzle Quest, which has a lot of bullshit to it.
Oh, yeah.
This one has less of it. It's, you're not even really able to really grind too much, but you are kind of moving around, finding fights that you can beat amongst the ones you can, to get stronger, and then going to the other ones and taking them on, kind of game where I do all the stuff in the game, all the side quests and that. So that's one to keep an eye on. That'll be out this fall at some point. So that's exciting to see. Or no, it'll be out this summer, I guess. So that will be out here in the next few months. So there you go, something to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm.
But something people have been checking out, Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection, launched on April 14th and has reached 1 million units sold worldwide. Mm. That includes both Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection Volume 1 and 2, I believe, as separate purchases, as well as if you just bought the whole thing, the whole collection. So it's maybe not indicative of people getting the whole thing, but people are at least buying one part of it, probably the first couple. I don't know, but...
I never actually checked the eShop. Like, how much is one part of it?
I want to say they are like $40 each or $60 together.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I have it physically. I just haven't opened it yet. But I didn't know that they were...
Yeah, they're $40 each, $60 for all of it, which definitely makes that a better purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it's definitely a lot of games, a lot of content, a lot of hours, and it's really hard, too. So even more hours spent struggling.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. A lot of people playing the new Mega Man collection, which means we'll probably keep getting more collections. Because they still have more Mega Man games to put in collections. Especially like those Legends games and some of the spinoffs from that PS1 era. That kind of stuff. So, let's get to our next one here. Some good news. Sega of America employees have filed for unionization.
Mm-hmm.
They said they have a supermajority of their 144 employees across Sega of America's quality assurance, live service, localization, marketing, and product development departments have filed to form a union.
Mm-hmm.
They are calling their union Aegis, Allied Employees Guild Improving Sega,
in
partnership with the Communication Workers of America. So that's cool. They put out a message about that. Yeah, here it is. We received word yesterday that a petition has been filed with the this is from Sega of America President and COO Ian Curran.
Mm-hmm.
We received word yesterday the petition has been filed with the National Labor Relations Board by various SOA employees seeking union representation. Union matters are new to me and SOA, and we are investigating considering the options available to the company. As I understand it, the petition filing means that the NLRB will conduct a secret ballot election several weeks down the road for employees who are in specific job classifications to be determined by the NLRB. These employees will be voting for or against union representation.
Mm.
And it seems like a very kind of milquetoast, like, well, this is what's going to happen, because there's a letter out to all the employees at Sega of America.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, maybe not. So right here about talking about, like, we have a wonderful culture at SOA with a strong commitment to working together as a team.
This ain't crap.
In my mind, is the SOA employee culture that makes us such a successful company.
I swear, I hate this sanctimonious bullshit. It's like, yeah, you can't form a union. You're a family. No, you and your employees are not a family. You're an employer. They work for you. Everything else is subordinate to that.
Yeah, and asking people to have questions to reach out to human resources, which human resources is not there to help out the employees. They're there to help out management.
Yeah, they're there to protect the company.
Yeah, the company and management, depending on what level of thing you're, talking to them about.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. Hopefully that works out in everybody's favor that voted for it. So there you go. But next up here, some sad news. Vice has officially announced that they are shutting down Waypoint. Waypoint, if you do not know, was a site formed by Austin Walker, who was at Giant Bomb before he formed this. Wanted to inform it with Patrick Klepek and some other writers of note that wanted to create a website for people that wanted to write about games as, you know, culture and write about the politics of gaming. And do a lot of criticism of games as reviews instead of just, score focused, you know, talk about the graphics and the audio and the gameplay and that kind of stuff.
Right.
I want to go to the next step of criticism on that front and have done a lot of really good work on that front, have cultivated a very cool community that wants to talk about that stuff and have, you know, had some turnover there over the years, some layoffs and such that have been unfortunate, but have kept a good core of people that have made it a fun place to check in on and see like what new stuff they're writing, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it always seemed like a site that was probably not going to be around for the long term just because of the way games media and media in general has been going of late for the past year or so, where a lot of places are getting shut down. The Washington Post had Launcher, their game coverage group, that despite, you know, having a lot of positive responses to the work they've been doing and, you know, the numbers they were getting and all that, still shut them down when push comes to shove. Vice is similar in that, like, yep, this is a thing we can get rid of because who cares about games coverage and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, unfortunately, it's putting, luckily they are not shutting down, I think, until June 2nd. So I'm assuming that's because they have formed a union. So they can't just like be like, you guys are done in 2 days kind of thing. So they get to get their ducks in a row for the people working there, look for new work, or, you know, start working on, you know, unemployment stuff or whatever else they're going to do for that stuff. So that's a big shame. But yeah, they've done a lot of good work. Definitely worth checking out their site. Just read more of what the cool people there have done. Listen to their podcast. And apparently one of their enemies is Palmer Luckey. Because once this news started spreading on Twitter, he decided to tweet and talk about how he was happy they were shutting down because they said mean things about him. That they end all of their podcasts with, you know, essentially, you know, fuck capitalism, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if I can find the specific quote here. Yeah, Vice is shutting down Games Media Division Waypoint and laying off the entire staff. I wish I could be magnanimous, but no, good riddance. Those assholes spread nasty lies about me for years in official and non-official capacities. Fuck capitalism, go home has been their podcast sign-off for years now. Guess they finally got what they wanted. I am sure most of them will find a home at one of the many outlets from the 0% interest days that doesn't care about ethical journalism practices or making money. But sometimes you have to appreciate the little wins. And then he followed up, for the people who think this is in poor taste, sorry, no sympathy. The lies these people told are part of why I had my entire company and identity ripped away from me. They went for my scalp, kicked me while I was down, celebrated my fall, and derided my return. Screw them. And so, yeah, you know, Palmer Luckey is an incredibly rich person.
Yeah.
He helped form Oculus.
Yeah.
Before selling it off to Facebook and then stepping away, probably due to some controversy. And then what he did with his next company was build surveillance tech for, you know, the border patrol people.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff for that. So he's very much into building kind of shitty tech that nobody should really want and making money off of it. So yeah, there you go. That's all that. It's a shame they're going down. But yeah, hopefully everybody's proud of the work they've done over the years. And I assume people will be making sure that everything's archived for future purposes.
Hope so.
But yeah, there you go. And next up is a similar theme of fuck capitalism. The UK's Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, announced on Wednesday that it decided to block Microsoft's $69 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard, citing concerns about competition in the growing cloud gaming market that Microsoft's acquisition would further dominate mm-hmm. as a result, which is an interesting sort of turn of events that people are so concerned about the console stuff, the Call of Duty aspect of it that was a big focus of people's attention, and sort of this seems like the thing that really was an issue for this group, especially in the wake of them signing a bunch of like 10-year deals mm-hmm. with various cloud gaming services, where what I gathered from reading about it was essentially like, oh, we can put these big games, your Diablos, your Call of Duties, your Overwatches and whatnot on these services, from GeForce Now to a bunch of smaller, like country specific mm-hmm. services for 10 years. And then at the end of that, being like, all right, now if you want to keep playing those games, you know, you have to do that on Xbox kind of thing, and just kind of swoop in and undermine these other services and just say like, nope, cloud gaming is over here on xCloud, whatever that is, in 10 years.
Yeah.
As they're continually building it up. And that seemed to be sort of a thing that they were not too thrilled about. Mm-hmm. In that Microsoft and Activision Blizzard are appealing it. Mm-hmm. So that could take a while still. So if you're hoping to get Diablo 4 on Game Pass at launch, that seems to be over at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Activision Blizzard's been more of the weirdly aggressive front on this stuff, as I think Lulu Chang Miservi, who came in, I think, around the time they did this acquisition, was very much making very threatening tweets about this in a way of, I might have to, here it is. The CMA's report contradicts the ambitions of the UK to become an attractive country to build technology businesses. Mm-hmm. We will work aggressively with Microsoft to reverse this on appeal. The report's conclusions are a disservice to UK citizens who face increasingly dire economic prospects. Mm-hmm. We will reassess our growth plans for the UK. Global innovators, large and small, will take note that despite all its rhetoric, the UK is clearly closed for business. I was like, this is a weirdly threatening note. You're like, nothing, no part of this $69 billion acquisition is going to help the people that are struggling to pay their energy bills and food bills and all that. This isn't like a trickle-down economics shit right here.
Mm-hmm.
This would be going to, you know, the top people at Activision Blizzard and their shareholders and such. In a way, it's like, this isn't trickling down to the regular people in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe to the UK employees that Activision Blizzard has, but not in a way that's going to like change anything. And being weirdly anti-big government thing does not make us, you know, look like any better of a deal. I've seen people be like, well, UK's blocked this, so can they just get, you know, approvals from the others, like the European Commission is working on whatever they're doing right now to put out a decision, and the FTC will be the other one, a big one. It's like, well, if they get approved by that, would they then be able to be like, ah, screw the UK, let's, you know, just finish this? And it's like, technically they could, but it would be really torpedoing their business and signaling to every other government that like their potential fears for what this acquisition with Microsoft would do to the futures of the market, and be like, maybe they should have been all blocking it. Because you're very much signaling like, we're not trustworthy at all on any of this. You lose the business with the UK, all the business you would be doing there, which I think the UK is their second or third biggest market for all of Microsoft business. So it's like, no company that wants to continue to do business around the world would, you know, cut off their nose just to spite, you know, a regulation authority on this. And so it definitely puts a hamper on their chances to acquire Activision Blizzard. As we said, like the appeal could take months or even a couple of years to sort through.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's sort of a part of this deal that if they don't get it done by June, the Microsoft owes Activision Blizzard, you know, a few billion dollars, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's certainly has created a whole thing where a lot of Xbox people that were weirdly invested in this deal are now super anti-government in a hilarious way.
Mm-hmm.
As they've been acting like they are, you know, experts on these kinds of acquisitions. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
this is, you know, an acquisition that is very unique for how much money is being thrown around
mm-hmm.
for it in a way that's like, yeah, all of you were wrong on this, or most of you were wrong. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's time to sit down and maybe not like emotionally invest yourself into this kind of acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm.
Got anything to add, Brandon?
No, not really. Other than the fact that social media is a curse, and honestly, it's amazing to watch people who... It's amazing to watch the whole Dunning-Kruger effect happen in real time. Yeah. And I think what some of these companies or the people who are currently handing them don't understand is Microsoft in particular is that kind of shit doesn't fly in Europe. Like it, that type of rhetoric just doesn't work over there.
They have a history of this stuff.
Yeah. And but yeah, it's amazing when these people who, you know, come up against another country's leaders and culture, and they think that they can sort of bullshit their way through it because, you know, they think that they can pull the same tricks that they do in the U.S. and then they try it outside the country and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, I mean, we see that all the time with, you know, our politicians here in the U.S. where, you know, they're confronted by, you know, a journalist from, say, Australia or the UK or, you know, any other country. And, you know, they bring up these really good points. And so they have to either, they usually say something about, well, I'm sorry, you don't live in a country that enjoys our freedom, and then scurries away like that was an argument.
Yeah.
Like the rest of the world can see through that bullshit.
Yeah. And it's like these regulatory groups, you know, have spent, you know, the better part of a year looking through all these details and mm-hmm. you know, having back and forths with, you know, Microsoft and Activision Blizzard about their concerns and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Microsoft's had plenty of opportunities to do, you know, real, you know, stuff to, you know, agree with those things. Or they mm-hmm. just say, like, we think you're overblowing it, that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, this happens when you don't seem to do enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that whole thing. And then you get people that are like, well, I can't believe people that weren't elected, you know, can have this kind of power. And it's like, yeah, that's not how it works. The people above them, you know, nominate them for these positions to get into. It's not like these are random people who just showed up and like, oh, I think this is bad. We should just block it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a local, like, even city council thing if, like, nobody voted for a position.
Mm-hmm.
And just one person put their name on the ballot and got in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's not even like that. It's just, these are people whose job is to look into this stuff from all angles.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole job is to consider what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
You know, they may have, you know, assumptions and such that don't pan out, but then that's the reality of trying to think about the future of these industries.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it goes the way you think, sometimes other things happen and changes how everybody does things. Mm-hmm. And like the cloud market's certainly one that has a lot of room to grow.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, oh, it's only 1% of, you know, the industry's total worth. And it's like, yeah, but for the cloud market itself, Microsoft is like up to 70% of it.
Yeah.
And that's not great for that stuff. And I believe Microsoft has said like they want to get to like 3 billion players.
Yeah.
And that would be done through, you know, cloud stuff. Not having people need to get special hardware to access their games.
Mm-hmm.
And so acquiring some of the biggest properties in the gaming world and making them exclusive to your cloud streaming stuff is certainly a way of doing that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's that whole deal. We'll have to see how things go in the future, but obviously Microsoft and Activision are very mad about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't really have a horse in this race. I've pretty much gone under the assumption that this deal, like, is pretty much closed. So, you know, considering that we have all this interference here, it's, I don't know. I feel like they're delaying the inevitable, and whether that is the case or not, you know, we'll have to see. This is obviously... probably the first time where I think that the deal could be threatened, just because, like, you know, we're dealing with a global power here. And not only are we dealing with a global power, we're dealing with probably the second most important global audience to any of these companies, especially Microsoft, because when you think about it, and, you know, Chris mentioned it, like they hold like a 70% market share of cloud gaming in general. And part of that is because Microsoft just like understands that technology the most. This would, in essence, just, you know, be a, you know, as much as I want to say I'm in a monopoly here, the main thing is that the other companies, you know, whether it be Sony, even Nintendo, it's like they just don't have the resources to really compete with Microsoft in this regard. And this pretty much just puts the nail in the coffin for them. But at the same time, you know, Microsoft has really struggled to really dominate the industry in a way that it really could. Like, you know, every E3, and, you know, RIP to E3, we always talk about, oh yeah, this is the one where Microsoft could really just, you know, step on everyone's throats. And then they don't, because they don't have, you know, the exclusives to really measure up to a Sony or a Nintendo. But yeah, like, the funny thing for, to me, in regards to just to this whole blockage, is the fact that even though, you know, the UK government is showing that this could definitely be trouble in the long term. You know, with all the deals that Microsoft signed, especially like that Call of Duty one with Nintendo, which I think is like 10 years, the industry can change in 3. So, you know, we don't know what it'll look like in 5 years. We don't know what it'll look like in 10 years. So, you know, like, that being said, like, it's tough to really say that all of this really gets any credence. Obviously, Microsoft and Activision are, you know, working hard to just go ahead and appeal this, and we'll see where that goes. But yeah, like, at the end of the day, especially when you look at the kind of games that Microsoft has, you know, shown to the world, like, they're definitely important in the UK. And the part that's scary here is, I don't know if the UK wants to lose out on that money, because, you know, like, a decade ago, or at least, you know, going back to the N64 PS1 generation, like, the UK mattered, but it doesn't matter the way they do now, especially with all of them dominating the FPS world in regards to esports and all that. It's a different world, and it's not one that I am like too familiar with. But yeah, it's, for me, it's just a wait and see approach. I don't see it really being that, you know, integral to, you know, canceling this deal, because everything has already been signed. But yeah, what does that say?
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting next, you know, chunk of time for this deal to see sort of what the appeal stuff goes. Does the FTC and the EC kind of follow the CMA's route? Do they agree with some of their stuff there? All that. So that's going to be interesting to see how that stuff goes. So it would certainly throw another wrench into the sort of general defense of the Microsoft acquisition, that, you know, is trying to discredit the CMA somehow, like it matters anything they say.
Yeah.
So if one of those or both go alongside the CMA, that essentially kills the deal. Because they may be able to appeal this and get, you know, some sort of reconciliation to fix whatever things Microsoft overlooked on this front.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see how that stuff goes. Because I don't know if either of those are like looking or have their plans to put out their findings in the near future.
Mm.
So that'll make all of the people trying to cover this thing blow their minds.
Mm-hmm.
If one of these other two regulatory groups also votes against the deal.
Yeah.
It just kind of shows that there's a bit of a difference between a, you know, a $7 billion deal and a $70 billion deal.
Mm-hmm.
For a publisher, and Microsoft be able to put their money elsewhere if they want to.
Yeah.
And they probably would. So, but yeah, that's going to do it, unless either of you have anything else to add.
No.
All right.
Got it pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty much it. I guess like the one point I'd have to add just to this last story is like, you know, we talked about, oh, how can elected at the same time, the UK isn't exactly like, or like the UK people aren't exactly thrilled with their policy. Especially lately, so it's just all of that.
Yeah. But you know, generally the regulatory stuff is it doesn't really change too much for them over the years. So, but yeah, that's gonna do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news.
Mm-hmm.
It will be in May, so maybe the weather will be a little bit better. We'll see. But yeah, that's going to do it. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know that they should check it out, as well as select strangers that may also be interested in a new podcast of the billions that are out there.
The billions and billions and billions and billions of podcasts that are out there.
Yeah. We got one more that you should probably check out. So, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. We hope you have a good week ahead. And we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.